From the Sky News Centre at 6. Breaking news this hour. Police in Wiltshire say they found the source of a deadly nerve agent which killed local woman Dawn Sturgis. It was discovered in a bottle in the Amesbury home of her partner Charlie Rowley, who remains in hospital after being exposed to it. Our crime correspondent Martin Brunt has more details.
More tests are being carried out to see whether the novichok in this small bottle was from the same batch that contaminated Sergei and Yulia Skripal in March. That's the strong theory that the police have been working on.
Donald Trump and his wife Melania have been having tea with the Queen at Windsor Castle. Earlier, the US President met Theresa May and praised her leadership after criticising her handling of Brexit. The President repeatedly made gushing remarks.
This incredible woman right here is doing a fantastic job, a great job. I would much rather have her as my friend than my enemy, that I can tell you. Your Prime Minister, I would say the highest level of special. Thank you very much. It's been an honour.
Meanwhile, tens of thousands have walked through London to demonstrate against Mr. Trump's visit. Barry Weir reports.
A giant blimp showing the president as a big orange baby lifted over Parliament Square this morning. Some thought it was funny.
It's a great way to showcase British humour.
Hilarious, honestly.
Others not impressed.
Utterly disgraceful.
For demonstrators, there was time to paint more signs on the street before getting on the move.
I disagree with Trump's morals and everything stands for.
But at one point, there were words exchanged with Mr. Trump's supporters.
America is our strong ally. That shouldn't happen.
There were lots of colourful costumes and a few signs a bit too rude to read out.
Elsewhere, 80 more Pound World stores are going to close with a loss of over 1,000 jobs. That's the latest. I'm Charlie Max.
This is Bristol. It's Friday, 6 o'clock. Welcome to BCFM's Politics Show. I'm Tony Gosling. Helping us review this week's news is Labour Councillor for Central and Cabinet Member for Housing, Paul Smith. Also, Labour Councillor for Eastern, Afzal Shah. Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers is off this week. After the 7 o'clock news, how did it go with Trump at NATO? Well, apparently the US is fed up with paying 80% of the cost of NATO unless the European member state countries double their contribution from 2% of GDP to 4% of GDP. They might just pull their troops and their contribution out. Well, bring it on. UK has thousands of US troops here and a score or so of military bases. Some say the only purpose they're serving is to make Britain a target for Russian or maybe Chinese ballistic missiles. So after seven, we have Bob Nichols from Bristol Against the Arms Trade, who's organised a walk and a picnic this weekend, taking in some lovely urban countryside and some of Bristol's two dozen or so arms companies. So the Israeli settlement programme, we go to Gaza to take a look at the real reasons Israelis go to live there. They've been recently protected by the Israeli Defence Force with 130 peaceful protesters, unarmed protesters from Palestine, being shot dead by the brave IDF. And we try anyway to go to the heart of the matter and ask, why does it say, where does it say in the Bible Netanyahu should behave like this, shooting unarmed peaceful protesters? And if so many secular Jews, including senior politicians and military men, don't believe in God, who promised them this land? That's in the second hour after seven. On to our news review in a minute, but first, Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from The Weather Outlook. com. Tonight, warm. The rain should be gone by about 11 p.m. This weekend will be sunny and warm. Cloud cover and rain around about, no cloud cover, but the temperatures around about 24 to 25 Celsius. Pretty sunny, a few clouds. Next week, the occasional clouds again. Dry all week. That's an around temperatures around 23 to 25 Celsius. Next weekend, that's the 21st and 22nd of July. Cooler, about 22 Celsius. Tiny drop of rain over the weekend, but mostly sunny. Weekend, the week after next, sunny weather, occasionally cloudy, hotter again though, 25 to 26 Celsius. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from the Weather Outlook. com. But helping us review this week news, I hope, on the line is Labour's Cabinet Member for Housing. Anyway, we have here Afzal Shah, Eastern Councillor. Hi, Afzal, welcome to the Politics Show.
Hi, Tony.
Why don't we just talk about what I was talking about? We're going to be talking about this in the second hour too, but Trump's visit to Britain. We've seen a fantastic amount of pomp and a lot of money spent, particularly at Blenheim Palace, on a luxury meal last night. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't be feeding the guy, but it does seem as if this is a very, very important relationship that some people want to make sure works.
It is an important relationship with America, but then again, the relationship that we have with our European Union neighbours is extremely important, and our relationship with countries in the former Commonwealth are extremely important. So I think that we have to look at it in perspective. But just look at all the cutbacks that we've had with the police. Yet 105 police officers from Avon and Somerset Constabulary have been diverted from their duties here, and they've been assigned to go and protect Donald Trump.
But that's part of being in a democracy, isn't it? You have to give people the right to protest.
You do, but this particular president is something else, someone who does not understand etiquette or political norms whatsoever. He's torn up the script again and again, and not in a very positive way. And I think that he is welcome to come to this country, but then why should we accord him such a welcome when his is a politics of division and hate?
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, this is what he was elected in the US to do, this in a way, to actually tear up the status quo. And that's one of the reasons people voted for him. I mean, that's why he's there, because people are fed up, at least some people anyway, in the US with the status quo.
I'm sure they are. There's a lot of disenchantment and disillusionment within politics. And I think that we have a responsibility as elected representatives to ensure that we change that, especially at the grassroots level, and then feeding back up to our parliamentary colleagues as well. But in terms of Donald Trump coming here, what exactly has the visit achieved? Yes, a lot of people have come out, and you only had to see the strength of feeling yesterday here in Bristol. Thousands and thousands of people were out in force. And we see the rise of the far right here in Europe. We see what Trump has done to bring out the hatred within closet racists and people who are now openly racists and homophobic and Islamophobes. Come out, they feel empowered to actually speak out over there, and we're seeing a lot of that translating into this country as well. Personally, I think that we shouldn't have to extend such a warm welcome to him. It's not really achieved much at all. I think our focus should remain with sorting out the mess that the current government has got us into over Brexit.
Well, look, I'm also joined by Rick Carey. Could you tell us what's been going on College Green? Because that's another reason I've asked Afzal in here today, is we really need to look at what's going on with the homeless. As far as I can see, we've got many people living in tents in the city now. When Paul was on here last, he talked about something like 400 being the unofficial street homeless count in the city. Obviously, these people want to sleep somewhere. They need to sleep somewhere. They're going from park to park. They're being evicted from one park to go to another. And now they've ended up on College Green. So can you just tell us the latest on what's been happening?
Kind of overview the situation. The council's bringing in a new consultation on the homelessness draft policy. There's a few things in the policy that we disagree with. One is the grouping of high impact and low impact. We believe that the council should have the power to make flexible and bespoke arrangements. And quite recently, today, we were in court, and we actually managed to attain a flexible arrangement with the council. You can call it a social contract, in return for continuing the absolute zero occurrence of antisocial behaviour on the site, keeping the grounds clean and tidy. From that, we've actually gained the right to stay on the green until the 24th of July. So we are protesting against the inability of the council with the policy to have bespoke arrangements.
No, this whole thing of bespoke arrangements, what do you mean by that? Give us an example.
A bespoke arrangement would be where an individual rough sleeper or van dweller or someone that lives alternatively, maybe transiently, is well known in the area, has a kind of a contract in ways with the neighbours around them. Everyone's happy, the area's kept tidy, and in a city which has a growing homelessness problem, we will see more people on the streets, and we need to think about how we're accepting them into our communities, and from a purely capitalist point of view, utilising their skills and resources to possibly take place of the cuts that the council are putting through.
Afzal, what do you make of this? Because it just seemed to me as if wherever the homeless pop up, the council spend our taxpayers' money on just taking him to court, trying to get rid of them.
Well, I'd just like to begin by saying that the consultation will last for 8 weeks. It started last month, so we've still got over a month left. And I would ask people to take part in that. They can log on to the Bristol City Council website and log in and make sure that they make their feelings known. We, as a city, we spend over £16.5 million a year on tackling homelessness. That is significant. Of course, that is one of our priorities. Many of the people who are homeless, of course, the vast majority of them, including those people who live in the caravans, they are vulnerable people. However, the council is in a bit of a difficult position that if they don't launch this consultation to ascertain people's thoughts, to actually make clear that we want to support people, so it's not a case of that we're stigmatising them. But I live in Greenback myself, and I have seen that although many people who live in the caravans, they go about their basic day-to-day life in a very amenable manner, there are some who have been involved in antisocial
behaviour. I want to stop you there, because so are some of the people that live in ordinary houses. I mean, you know, I think we're getting to the point where we understand that the people who are living in tents, living in caravans, actually need a bit of a leg up rather than the finger pointing.
Definitely not pointing fingers, Tony. Definitely not. As in the administration, we agree wholeheartedly that there's a massive crisis in housing. We are making progress. You only have to look at Greenbank with the chocolate factory. I know that Paul has been working extremely hard behind the scenes to make sure that we get element of affordable housing. We do our hands tied behind our backs because of national legislation. But having said that, it is a priority. I know there's hundreds of people who are homeless, and Bristol is one of the most divided cities in the UK. But rest assured, the council will do all it can to safeguard those individuals who are vulnerable. And that includes people living in tents. But what I'm saying is that as somebody who lives near the caravan site up in Greenbank, I know that there have been some elements, right? And I know that the...
Anyway, look, I hope we're joined on the line now by Paul Smith. Hi, Paul, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, fantastic. Paul, can you just give us a idea of why you've decided that these people need to be removed again from another park?
Which people need to be removed?
The people on College Green.
The people on College Green. College Green is a public park, not a campsite. So I think we've managed to reach an agreement with them about when they'll leave, which is the 24th of July. And, you know, it's been a protest. It's been a peaceful protest. I think it's been quite a friendly protest. But the council, you know, does have a sort of general approach to parkland, is that it should be available as parkland rather than turn into campsites.
What about those who are camped up around the bus station, because they were told they had to move. I mean, some of these people, Paul, genuinely just have nowhere else to go.
Yeah, so what we're offering as part of the consultation is that anybody who is on the streets, we will offer them a minimum of 7 days indoors, during which time we can do the assessment, find out what their needs are, and try and get them into the appropriate sort of longer-term accommodation. So it's not a question of just trying to move people on. We're actually trying to move people indoors. And we know, you know, all the evidence is that sleeping on the street, whether it's in a tent or in a pile of sleeping bags or under a plastic bag, it's actually dangerous to people's health. And, you know, the average life expectancy is sort of in their mid-40s. And so we know it's not healthy, but we also know that some people feel that that's the only option available to them. But what we want to do is bring them in, settle them down, give them the confidence to be back indoors, and to try and place them in the appropriate accommodation. So we've got homelessness pathways for people with mental health problems, people with drug and alcohol problems, for women, for young people. So if they need support through those, we can do that. If they don't need any support, we've opened up meanwhile uses in empty council buildings where people can sort of move into their own self-contained room. And from there, we'll try and get them into their own flat.
Now, Paul, we're also joined by Si Jones, who is himself homeless. I want to just give the floor to you, Si, whether you think this is a plan that's working. Is it working for people like you, the idea of giving you a roof over your head for 7 days and then trying to get something more permanent sorted?
Good evening, Tony. Good evening, Paul. Well, firstly, I'd like to get back to Paul's first point about why the camp, the occupation on College Green, was evicted. And that is stated by a BCC officer in a witness statement that it was due to the reputational financial loss that they, BCC, feared they would suffer.
Is that correct, Paul?
Sorry, representations from whom?
It was from Gemma Dando.
Oh, right, yeah, well, Gemma Dando is from the Parks Department.
That is a stated reason in her witness statement. And that is, although contradicted by the correspondence we've had with this weekend's event down there, and they were, we have written a statement where they were fully in support of the protest that was occurring and wanted to work with us, but they were told not to engage and not to encourage.
Well, look, Paul, if I can just come in there, what Si seems to be saying is that actually the council is more concerned about the way things will look if a whole sort of tent city appears on College Green.
Well, as you know, parks don't come under my brief, and so I'm not party to those discussions particularly. But I think that what was being suggested was that, as well as a protest, that homeless people come and live there. And, you know, so the view that we take is that that isn't the most healthy way for homeless people to be. We want to get them off the streets, indoors, into, if they need supported accommodation, into supported accommodation. If they don't need supported accommodation, into non-supported accommodation. I mean, we deal with nearly 800 people a year coming onto the streets. It's not the same people all the time. And the reason why it's not the same people is because we do move people through these homeless pathways. And what we're trying to do is support people to get into more mainstream housing.
But look, Paul,
there'll be a small number who don't want that, but I think it's a very small number.
Paul, some will say that actually what's really going on here is that the council doesn't really see housing the homeless as a big priority. It's just actually spending less money on doing this. I mean, if you go back, say, for example, to the 1980s even, 1970s, they were building council houses for these people.
Well, firstly, we spend just on managing the homelessness that we've got at the moment, in terms of the services for homeless people, in terms of temporary accommodation that we provide, our advice services. Council is spending currently £16 million a year. That's more than it was spending 2 years ago when we were elected as an administration. Some of that is the expenditure failure of the system, because we've got over 500 families living in temporary accommodation at the moment because of the failure of the housing market. We've committed £220 million over 5 years to the building of social housing. We've got the biggest social rented programme for over 30 years within the city, also the biggest council house building programme for over 30 years. So whilst I accept that the system has failed, and we've seen a dramatic rise in homelessness since the government made many cuts to benefits, started sanctioning people, and also cuts to other support services, the City Council is actually putting more investment in than it's done in living memory, really.
It's an interesting point you make, Paul. It's Rick speaking. How you doing? It's just the fact that hostels aren't really fit for purpose for many of the population of people who are living on the streets, who are either clean and trying to get away from drugs, or on drugs and being around other drug users would cause problems in their recovery. I mean, I've got a list in front of me from the camp. I won't name names for kind of privacy reasons, but some of the reasons that people wouldn't go into hostels: cannot live with addiction and noise pollution, domestic abuse from a past partner. There's a chap on site that's been refused any kind of engagement with the council because he's still on a 20-year-old tenancy through his ex, who he can't live in that house. And there's great problems with the system of getting people into real houses. And of course, everyone appreciates the work the council's doing in building affordable housing and the right kind of housing. But in the meanwhile, this is what this council will be remembered for.
Paul, did you get that?
Yeah, I did get that. And, you know, there's obviously truth in the points that are being made, which is why we're trying to find more self-contained accommodation. It's also why we've started a housing first approach, particularly people with complex needs, so that they're going straight into self-contained flats, but with a wraparound of support. Now, we've got funding from the lottery for 11 places. We're just using some other government funding to provide another 10. But really, we need a sort of programme that's at least 10 times as big as that, which we're currently trying to access funding for.
Now, look, when you say complex lit needs...
To take some people directly from the street into their own self-contained accommodation. And also, there are also people on the streets who are working, who have got no, you know, current mental health problems or drug and alcohol problems. We want to get them straight into mainstream accommodation as quickly as possible. They don't have to go through the hostel pathway. But the hostel pathway, you know, does exist. If there are particular problems with it, we need to look at those and address them. I mean, we fund 800 hostel places within the city of Bristol at the moment.
No one's knocking the work that you're doing, Paul. It's great stuff that you're doing. The thing that myself in particular, that I don't like is the fact that the homelessness draft policy brings in more laws against homeless people and more kind of processes and protocol than you would use on anyone. There's enough laws, antisocial behaviour orders, public spaces protection orders, court orders, injunctions. There's a huge amount of laws and court infrastructure that can be used on any citizen whatsoever. Why, if someone is refusing to go into a hostel within 3 months, will they be at the brunt of the full legal capacity of the council?
Well, I mean, obviously, the policy that Simon is talking about is a draft policy that we're expecting reports on. I think also, before I was able to get in, I was listening through my radio, there was talk of, like, bespoke arrangement, and I don't see why that can't be part of the system. I mean, what's being proposed is a sort of framework, but all frameworks should have some flexibility to deal with particular circumstances. And especially if there are settlements which are not in any way problematic and are accepted by the people around them. In terms of using court, in terms of the point about, you know, the danger of criminalising homeless people, if you, as I say, last year we dealt with about 800 homeless people. There was one court case every 2 weeks, and the aim of the court cases actually isn't to get the injunction, it's to try and get people to work with us, and so it very rarely leads to sort of any sort of criminal action at all against people, no more, I would say, than it does to the general population. And a lot of those cases are actually dealing with people who are aggressively begging, who aren't actually homeless. I mean, we've had some where people have actually got their own council flat, but they've got into a cycle of begging, usually to feed a drug habit, and it's trying to make that more difficult for them as part of trying to help them come off of drugs.
Well, I don't think you're going to help people coming off drugs just by simply trying to take their money away, because they may well then just get involved with the organised crime pool.
Well, I don't think that's been our experience. I mean, actually, a lot of the drugs people take is organised crime. And, you know, the money that's going, a lot of the money that goes to the people who are begging on the streets, again, I emphasise a lot of them aren't homeless, and most homeless people don't beg, but the people who are begging on the street, that money, within a short period of time, is in the hands of drug dealers, illegal drug dealers, who actually don't care if homeless people die. I mean, we've had people being killed through the taking of spice on the street, and, you know, the money that funds that spice, that gets it to people, is from people giving money out to people on the street.
But we've also had
the care of a council means that we have to try and break that cycle.
But we've also had people die of cold, haven't we, who have been evicted by the council?
No, I don't think we have.
Or due to things like benefits being taken away, that sort of thing.
I mean, one of the things we check, Tony, is, and we look each year in terms of the information we get about how many people have died of cold or hypothermia, actually, most of the people dying on the street are dying as the direct result of drugs or alcohol. And, you know, we had a tragic case of somebody who was mashed up in a skip as well. That it's not cold. And, you know, when the cold weather is on, we do, and most people do come in, the vast majority of people do come in, we try and bring them in off the street. But the offer we're making through this policy is that we will bring people in for a minimum of 7 days off the streets or out of their tents, that they can then get the assessments, which hopefully will link them up with the support services that they need.
One of the reasons for the protest at College Green was because although it's said as being a draft policy proposed in a consultation, none of the grassroots organisations that are involved with outreach of homeless people had heard that there was a policy consultation going on. When I went into 100 Temple Way last week to fill in a homelessness assessment, the housing officer, the Bristol City Council housing officer there, was not aware there was a Bristol City Council consultation on homeless encampments. I was fortunate enough to be able to hand her some leaflets informing her of this, and she thanked me and said she would hand them around her colleagues.
So one does wonder, Paul, if this consultation, you've already decided what you want to do.
Well, I don't think we have, and it's interesting. I mean, we actually launched the consultation secretly by having a press conference with the Cable, the Bristol Post, Bristol 24/7, the BBC, and the ITV, all there.
But you've got to actually reach the homeless people too, Paul. You obviously haven't reached them.
And also, Simon, the protest started within 2 days, I think, of the consultation starting. And it's quite right that the flyers and the information had not been distributed at that point. fact that those flyers and information were going out to all of the agencies. And before we actually started the consult, there was a long period before we started the consultation, talking to the homeless agencies that engage with the council on a regular basis, including, you know, the Methodist Day Centre, all of the night shelters, the Goose, and shelters, and St Mungo's, and all of the range of that homelessness agency, which we spoke to before the document was even drafted. I mean,
I actually have a recording of two St Mungo's outreach workers mentioning that they knew nothing about the draft policy and that they didn't have capacity to take on people for the week. They didn't think that people should be moved on if they didn't want to be moved on. They believed, like us, that if you are homeless on the street, it's a bad enough point in general. And just to quickly skip back to the point about drink and drugs, if people are on the street and are self-medicating with drink and drugs and then die from it, then we only have one body to blame, and that's the people that should be homing them, keeping them away from drink and drugs.
Afzal Shah is going to have to go any second now, but Afzal, I'm going to let you have a final word on this. What do you think we should be doing to and is it actually the job of Bristol City Council anymore to house these people, because we're living in apparently an age of austerity?
Well, we do have a legal responsibility, but going back to your point about the some of the van dwellers here, I've been up there myself, and my colleagues have too. We've distributed flyers to many of the those individuals who are.
Has the mayor been up there? Because he lives there, doesn't he?
I'm sure Marvin has regular conversations, but I know that he's got many other things that he's focusing on too. But I've certainly been down there. I've also been to the food bank, so we are trying to make sure that we do reach affected individuals. But just going back to what Paul was actually stating, I've seen it myself. There is drug dealing taking place. Now, it's not to demonise the majority, but it is happening, and there's a massive problem. You only have to look on St Mark's Road with those individuals who are dependent on drug and alcohol and the way that it affects them. I've always tried to speak to them and ask them, look, have you contacted St Mungo's? If not, we'll do it for you. So I think there is a collaborative approach here, but I'd just like to make one point that I'm also talking to Affordable Security Group. It's a new security company with a social enterprise and strong social ethics, and we're very keen to ensure that those individuals who are homeless, that we want to give them an opportunity to actually get trained up for different types of work. So that is an initiative that I'm taking on with Bristol City Council too.
When do you take for a lot of people, drugs and alcohol is simply a way of coping. I mean, it's a sort of a way of getting through the day when you don't have anywhere to sleep at night.
Well, I think it's very important that we do ensure that medical professionals are speaking to them, and I know that a lot of work is taking place in terms of mental health with the local GP practices, but I think that this discussion just goes to show that these issues still require a lot more work. But you just heard from Paul that in terms of the commitment that this administration has, we're spending over £16 million, which is far more than we've done before, even during austerity. And I think the bottom line is that we need to ask central government for more money. Austerity kills.
Well, I just have to be fair.
I'm not going to get my stun in a few minutes.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, just be quick, Paul, please.
Can I come back on this point about drugs and alcohol that Simon raised, which is my feeling is if I was in a position where I had to sleep on the street, I would pretty soon take to drugs and alcohol to make it bearable. And so in no way do I blame people who are on the street for taking drugs and alcohol. But, you know, there are people, it's a form of capitalism, which I know Simon's not keen on, and nor am I. It is a form of capitalism. The people who are actually selling these products, and which they're making money from, and they have no concern what
whatsoever about the health of the people. And it's absolutely right. I don't want anybody to be sleeping on the streets in Bristol or feel that they have to sleep in a van if they don't want to. If they want to sleep in a van, that's fine. But people shouldn't be in a position where that they feel sleeping on the streets is either the only option to them or the safest option to them, which is also very worrying.
Would you agree with Tom Gilchrist, the Traveller Liaison Officer and the lead on this consultation, that he's quoted in the cable as his long-term view is everyone should be in bricks and mortar?
Well, actually, a lot of what we're building these days is timber frames. So I haven't got bricks and mortar. I think what Tom is saying is all of the evidence is it's much healthier for people to live in homes.
I'm just asking this in
to live in other places. But if people want to live, for example, if we go back to the van dwellers, if there are people who want to live in vehicles, then I don't think it's up to the council to say no, you can't do that. If that's what they want to do, if that's a choice they're making, most of the people I've spoken to say that they're in vehicles because it's the only choice that's available to them, other than sleeping on the street, that they can't afford.
Bearing in mind that Bristol was European Green Capital 2 years ago, and how much money did we have for that? 8 million. What did that get spent on? Looking at it from a sustainable build, the draft consultation on rough sleepers is saying rough sleepers, maximum stay, sit 3 months, then you have to engage with St Mungo's. There is no green. Why aren't people being encouraged to self-build yurts, roundhouses?
There's no reason why that can't be part of the solution. We've been working with, in particular, Bristol Community Land Trust, but with a whole load of other co-ops and self-build organisations and community-led organisations looking at a process to release more land for self-build, for, you know, whether it's for small co-ops or for organisations that are more organised, like the Bristol Community Land Trust, to actually achieve that. People can register with the Bristol Community Land Trust if they're interested in self-build or self-finished. And, you know, I want to... We're drawing up sites that can be made available, probably through BCLT, for groups to do that. What I would like to see is a flourishing of co-ops and co-housing within Bristol and self-build. What I'm not that keen on is, you know, millionaire self-build mansions that you get on Grand Designs. What we want to see is a real sort of flourishing of a community-led sector. At the moment, we've got about 1,000 homes in the pipeline solely through community-led propositions. And, they're in South Meath, they're in Knowle West. A lot of them are actually on the working class council estate. And where we're looking to also skill up people from those estates to be able to build those homes.
Now, Paul, Paul, thank you very much, but yep. I think you've got a few childcare issues there to get sorted out. Thank you.
I think my son's just finished his mixed martial art, so I better go and get it.
Okay. All right, thanks very much for joining us, Paul. And that's Paul Smith. He's Labour councillor for Central, and he's also on the Cabinet for Housing. So thanks very much to him. Rick, I know you've got to go as well in a minute, for different reasons, which we won't go into right now. But anyhow, can you want to give a final comment on what you've just heard?
Personally, I find it very easy to be blinded by promises and this is going to happen and this is going to happen. I think that we're in a day and age now where people can get real access to what is going on. And I think with a Labour council, I guess in this 2 years preparing for the next election, it's going to be action more than words that really make an effect.
I mean, I can't bear it on the radio where people say I have to say, because you never have to say anything. But I do have to say that I did contact the Liberal Democrats and I did contact the Green Party to come on and discuss this, because this is apparently part of their they've got very important housing proposals, but I couldn't get anyone to come on and Anthony Negus from the Lib Dems. He was busy and couldn't find me somebody else to come on instead. So neither could Gary Hopkins, who was the last year's leader of the Lib Dems. And I was very, apparently an email went around all the Green group and nobody could come and talk about it. So thank you so much, Rick, for coming in to talk about this. Because for me,
cheers,
when people
thank
are
you.
Starting to pitch their tents outside College Green, that's actually quite a powerful political statement.
It's the safest place for people, really. It's CCTV, police. Why put homeless people anywhere else than in your front garden?
And if people are rattling change in their pockets thinking of going into the church, they might come over and give people yeah. a few bob as well. Can you just recap before you leave, just finally, what is the result of the court case at the High Court today?
The result of the court case today was that we can stay until the 24th of July. We really do believe that these kind of bespoke arrangements of negotiated stopping could really, really help build a flexible approach to housing. So we're going to continue supporting the guys down there.
So that's Tuesday week?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll see what happens by then if you manage to find somewhere else. Anyway, thanks very much for joining us.
Cheers.
Si Jones is still here, though. Si, what do you make of what Paul Smith had to say there? He's the man that spends our money. His little slice of our £350 million the council spends of our money every year.
I do applaud Paul's efforts to get more social council housing built. That's what people need. Not the market rate affordable that's 85% of local market rates, but it's proper social council housing that should be available for anyone that wants it. As he pointed out, there's central government cuts, neoliberal economic-driven austerity that's been going for, what, 6-7 years? And some Conservatives have talked about this carrying on till
10 years, isn't it? I mean, it started, the cuts started 2008. There was all of a sudden, but yes, you're right, 8 years really, because when the Cameron government came in 2010, that's when the major kick in of austerity began.
And some of the Conservative, Osborne's talked about austerity lasting until middle of next decade, 2025.
So who's Osborne? Who's he?
Oh, didn't he get moved? Wasn't he an editor of some has-been newspaper somewhere now?
Okay, there's some other things that would be nice to talk about, if you don't mind, this week. One of them is the revelation, which I hadn't heard, which came out just after the St. Paul's Carnival, which was plans to make the St. Paul's Carnival self-funding. Now, this starts to sound like they might start charging for it, and the council will pay something like, I think it's about £600,000-£700,000 for the carnival to happen. Obviously, they've saved that money the last few years by not having a carnival. But it now seems to me that they want the carnival to fund itself. Do you think that's realistic?
Wasn't it self-funding before? Before
no,
the council got
so.
Involved?
No, I don't think so. No, it was always has been part funded by the. Possibly it was self-funding back in when it started in the 1950s, 60s.
Yeah, right? Didn't the people just get it on and do their own thing without the council involvement? But now there'll be all sorts of health and safety.
I mean, one,
and commercial
one does
interest.
Wonder if it's going to end up like Glastonbury, something like that, you know, with a kind of, big wall of steel around the outside and people having to pay to go in.
St. Paul's generally seems to be getting slowly, well, not so slowly, gentrified.
Have you got anything to say about the resignations, cabinet resignations this week? We've had David Davis go and Boris.
I'd say there's not enough.
Not enough resignations. What do you think about Brexit? Is it going to be a disaster? Is it, what's going to happen?
I'm not putting any bets on it.
Will it happen?
It looks like there are some powers, some influences that are pushing for it and some that aren't.
Let's go to Prime Minister's questions. Something that I think, I imagine, is fairly close to your heart, which is this use of personal independence payments for disabled people and also the rollout of universal credit.
We're streeting!
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Until she was raped at the age of 18, my constituent led a healthy and happy life. Since then, she suffered severe post-traumatic stress disorder, seizures and blackouts, panic attacks, anxiety and depression, heavily reliant on her mother's care. The Department for Work and Pensions has refused to award her the enhanced rate of personal independence payments on the basis that when she presented for her assessment, she wasn't demonstrating these particular symptoms at the time. And as a result, her mother is unable to claim income support and carer's allowance, placing financial hardship on top of severe emotional distress. Can I ask him to arrange a meeting for me with the Secretary of State for Work and Pensions? Because what my constituent has experienced is, I'm afraid, another example of what we see week in, week out in our surgeries, which is the cruel and inhumane consequences of this government's welfare policies.
Well, I know that the Honourable Gentleman has campaigned on the issue of DIPG for some time, and I think the whole House would want to offer sympathies, which I certainly share, to his constituent and anyone affected by this appalling condition. I will certainly draw to the attention of the Secretary of State for Work and Pensions the points that he has made, and I'm sure that a meeting will be arranged for him with either the Secretary of State or one of her ministers.
So there we hear a rather horrific tale, Si, of somebody else who's lost everything through their benefits and they're suddenly in a situation where they could be, even be evicted, this sort of thing. I mean, this is getting worse and worse, it seems now, not just for disabled people. Anybody that doesn't have an income, the government is not actually often paying them the money they're entitled to.
They've been doing this for a while. It's part of an austerity agenda. That's driven by what's called neoliberal economics. That's a kind of paradigm. So we talked about the financial crisis of 2008-2009. I think that shattered the worldview of tens, if not hundreds of millions of people across the globe. It was an old manner of doing things as far as organising the economy and society goes. And I think that died for good during that crisis and its aftermath. We've yet to transition to a new way of doing things.
Any thoughts about what that might look like, that new way of doing things?
Instead of the more competitive way of doing things, I think it's going to be the younger generation that is coming up. Isn't it this year we're going to have a coming of age generation that has never known a global war on terror?
You've never known anything but a global war on terror?
Yes, that's what I mean. A lot of people, we've had this global financial crisis, 0% interest rates, grinding austerity for the last 10 years. We've got people become accustomed to this way of thinking. This is the way things are done. I think it will be the younger generation that is coming up that offers more radical solutions to things. Hopefully this is going to be a more cooperative solutions will be offered.
Okay, well, last week it was a sort of, maybe we could do another song this week for St Paul's Carnival, because I always think that it's the place to blast out the really political hip-hop and rap at the highest possible volume. So, you know, depending on whether you're a fan of hip-hop, you might look like this again. As last week, it's Chilli B from 1994.
I was born suspicious. I was born suspicious.
When I was born.
I was born suspicious. I was born suspicious.
When I was born,
I was born suspicious. I was born suspicious. I was born suspicious. I was born suspicious.
When I was born suspicious. Suspected of a crime that I didn't commit yet. But I just say bet, maybe it's my DNA, my genetical breakdown, because I'm skin brown. Homie is the clown that we all love to see on TV. But homie the clown ain't me, see? I kick the gift swift, cooler than Kool-Aid. And I can go off on the mic like a hand grenade. But still I chill because they expect me to have no respect for me, see? I ain't going out like a villain. I'm an anti-trigger, happy nigga that's chillin'. Wake up, it's time for the brothers to wake up. See through the makeup. They don't know me, but they fear me. Because I might be vicious. And I was born suspicious.
When I was born, I was born suspicious. When I was born, I was born suspicious. When I was born, I was born suspicious.
Damn, I can't even walk the streets at night without being harassed by the police. They say we all look alike. Well, that's a stereotype. Like P.E. said, don't believe the hype. Now they wanna rough me up and lock me down. They got my face in the crown. Black man with a phone in custody. So now they wanna take my fingerprints and ID.
It's not enough, they wanna rough me up and scuff me up. 14 police just to cuff me up. I guess there's no caviar dreams and champagne wishes when you're born suspicious. When I was born, I was born suspicious. When I was born, I was born suspicious. I was born suspicious.
Chilli B, 1994, Born Suspicious. Now, also joined by Cy Jones. Cy, you've also been homeless yourself right now. Can you just tell us a little bit about what the coping mechanisms are? I mean, because obviously it's not an easy situation to be in, is it?
I've been, I suppose, officially homeless for pretty much most last 20 years.
They offered you flats and maybe had to turn them down, that sort of thing, or not?
Mostly, well, I got involved in the late 90s on the tail end of the anti-road protests and have since been involved in living on traveller sites, squats, environmental, political occupations kind of since then.
I mean, this whole thing of travellers is actually quite an important aspect to all this because ever since the war, there's been this kind of war on gypsies, hasn't there? The idea that if anyone that wants to have a travelling lifestyle can't do it. I mean, we had, for example, in the 1970s and 80s, the peace convoy, which was literally smashed to pieces by the Thatcher government, the Wiltshire Police and various other police. But what's the agenda there then? Because it doesn't sound as if, and even from what Paul was saying, he was kind of hedging, wasn't he? It doesn't really seem to like the idea of people living in vehicles or caravans or anything like that.
Living independently or any alternative lifestyles. As there's a cable article about the consultation thing, and there was a quote from Tom Gilchrist, the traveller and liaison officer, saying he wants to see people living in bricks and mortar. I think that sums it up.
Well, that means paying rent, doesn't it? That means actually buying into the money system, where actually the money system doesn't really seem to be working.
No, it isn't working. Hasn't worked for the last 10 years. It wasn't working prior to that either. I mean, you never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, just build a new reality that makes the existing model obsolete.
Well, actually, it's not that new, is it? The idea of living independently and also not having to pay rent. I mean, effectively, you're talking about the sort of situation where if you're homeless, you want the most easily accessible and cheapest roof over your head because your main occupation is getting yourself out of homelessness. For example, there's been an enormous increase in the number of people getting and trying to get accommodation in canal boats. And that's another way where you can get somewhere to live, which is not, you're not talking about £400 a week.
The experience I've had when I've worked and lived on farms is you do a day's labour, one day's labour for your board. So that would equate to 20%. So on a minimum wage, 20% of your minimum weekly wage spent on rent. I'd find that reasonable. So what's that? What's the minimum wage now after tax? And 250, 280? So 20% of that would be 20, 40, 50, 60 pounds?
I mean, it just seems like the housing market is broken. It's getting worse. And as it's getting worse, so the few people who are living on the fringes are being told you're going to have to go and start renting now.
One of the issues we have with this draft policy consultation proposal on rough sleeping encampments is the wholesale outsourcing of homelessness provisions to St Mungo's. There's a mill there that people get into, and they can churn homeless people into it and make money out of it. Although they're a registered charity, there are other companies. Connolly and Callaghan were recently in the newspaper with a single mother putting her in a what amounts to an 8-foot by 8-foot temporary accommodation, and they're charging maximum £250 to £450 a week to the council for this. There are private companies making a lot of money. So although Paul says, "Oh, we're spending this amount of money," it's where the money's going to that's the important thing. And Marvin Rees has proved time and time again he's into outsourcing and commercialisation. And with the draft policy proposal on rough sleeper encampments, it's wholesale outsourcing of homelessness provision to private providers like St Mungo's.
But that's not true, is it? I mean, the council are looking at spending quite a lot of money in building actual council houses. Now, that's not outsourcing, that's them doing it themselves.
Some of it. Paul has talked about borrowing money for this. And there's the Bristol Housing Company. Haven't looked into the details of it. If on the face of it, it is owned by the taxpayers of Bristol, that is good.
But it's safe as houses, they say, don't they? But there's an ideological thing from the Conservatives, where they just don't seem to want this kind of thing to happen, having gone through the right to buy and all that stuff. Anyway, I think we maybe just wind up by talking a bit about Bristol Housing Action, because BAM is quite an interesting little group, started in the 1980s. Both you and I are involved in different ways. But there is, at least, squatting is a potential legal route that people often don't realise that you can squat legally.
Yes, totally. Commercial buildings are... empty commercial buildings aren't being used, totally legal to occupy, as long as you don't cause any criminal damage when you enter them.
I suppose the thing to do is give Paul a call and see if the City Council owns any empty commercial buildings.
They have quite a large property portfolio.
Well, I imagine that's... I should have asked him about that, maybe. Anyway, it's time to for the Murdoch News at 7, just coming up now. Thanks to our guests, Labour Councillor for Central and Cabinet Member for Housing, Paul Smith. Also, Labour Councillor for Eastern, Afsal Shah. See you after the news.
On 93.2, online and on your mobile. BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour, live from the Sky News Centre.